Case number 067091, Charles G. Woodard, appellant versus John Howard, review board et al. Ms. Easterly for appellant, Ms. Wilson, appellee.
May it please the court, Catherine Easterly for Mr. Woodard from the Public Defender Service. I'd like to reserve a minute of my time for rebuttal. In this case, which was prematurely dismissed on the pleadings, this court asked the parties to brief two issues, whether Mr. Woodard had a constitutional right to access his medical records, and what Mr. Woodard's habeas exhaustion obligations were. I'd like to focus on the habeas exhaustion issue because any doubt as to whether Mr. Woodard stated a constitutional claim to access his medical records has been whittled away by the briefing.
Can I ask you just the one question I have that I want to ask both sides, and that is, how do you read 14501K with 16-1901? As far as exhaustion, how do you read those two? Is it that 501K applies just to the mentally ill, and it doesn't use the phrase habeas corpus, but it certainly that's what it's describing. Is the specific directed to the mental patient, whereas 16-1901 is the generic and formally named habeas corpus?
Yeah, Congress set forth the habeas exhaustion requirements for NGI acquittees in DC Code 24501K7, yes. DC Code 16-1901 is a separate provision that a panel of this court in Blair Bay explained is a totally separate avenue to habeas relief, either in local court or in federal court. It's an avenue of habeas relief that D.C. petitioners can pursue separate from or in conjunction with other avenues for habeas relief. But in this case, it's independent of Mr. Woodard's exhaustion obligations. It imposes no exhaustion obligation on him at all. I think that that's what Blair Bay makes clear.
Does he have a choice? I mean, can he go...
Well, first he would have to exhaust under 24501K7,
okay,
which tells him to file a commitment challenge, tells him to file a motion in the court that has jurisdiction to hear that motion. Thereafter, he could seek habeas relief. In this instance, he opted to seek habeas relief in federal court under 2241. The district court, however, in this case, found that Mr. Woodard had not satisfied his habeas exhaustion requirements because he failed to appeal the denial of his motion under 24501K1. And the district court, in so doing, looked to the wrong section of the statute. It looked to 24501K6, which gives an NGI acquittee like Mr. Woodard the right to appeal. But the language is clearly permissive. It's not mandatory. It says an appeal may be taken. That's not the exhaustion provision in the statute. The exhaustion provision is in the next section of the statute, K7. And in fact, the United States and the district in this instance concede that the district court in this instance was wrong to look at K6. Because in making their exhaustion arguments and making their argument that Mr. Woodard failed to properly exhaust here, they don't look to K6. They look completely outside of 24501K to 28 U.S.C. 2254.
Can I ask one more practical question?
Yes.
What exactly is at issue here? Is it just the medical records?
Now, Mr. Woodard is seeking his medical records, and that's okay. The second issue.
So suppose,
but he's also seeking habeas relief.
Suppose the medical records were turned over tomorrow. What else would be left?
Well, he would still have, he has a claim for retrospective relief for denial of his medical records for the past 2 years. His claim is that he properly requested his medical records under the statute, and that they weren't given to him.
That's your 1983 case, right?
That's correct, and that's separate and apart. He's also seeking habeas relief, some sort of release from the custody of the district, either unconditional release or conditional release. He requested both in his habeas petition.
Okay, so there's a freestanding release claim.
Correct.
Okay, that you're still pursuing.
Yes.
Okay. Is he still in maximum security?
I don't believe so. No. No.
What's the release claim in the habeas case?
He's requesting either unconditional release, and if you look at his habeas petition, if you look at his pro se pleadings, he requests specifically independent living in a community residence facility. It's sort of, I think, akin to being paroled from St. Elizabeth's, but still under their custody. He also requests unconditional release from St. Elizabeth's and from the district's custody, asserting that he is sufficiently sane such that he does not need to be committed. And he does make that allegation.
One way to read the claim was that there's a habeas claim for release and that the medical records are needed, discovery in essence, to help him make the claim for release. Is that not the right way to look at this?
That's one way to look at it, but I do want to be sort of procedurally precise. And part of the problem is that Mr. Woodard was pro se below.
I understand.
And in his pleadings, he does allege that he is trying to file a complaint under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. He asserts a right to a jury trial. He asks for damages. At some point, he cites 1983. So I think that his medical records claim stands independent of, I think it informs his habeas claim, certainly.
Well, but if it's independent from his claim for relief, then it can't be litigated in habeas.
Right, correct.
It can only be litigated in the 1983 case. So, but as I understood your brief, though, for the habeas case, I didn't understand that you were arguing in terms of release. I thought you were arguing that the medical records were necessary for his claim for relief. Isn't that right?
No. Our habeas claim is that he has asked for conditional release or unconditional release. And our habeas claim, and with respect to the exhaustion issue, we indicated that he had clearly requested conditional release in a 24501K1 motion, mm-hmm. as required by K7, and thus he fulfilled his exhaustion requirements under the DC code, and he was permitted then to seek habeas relief in federal district court under 2241. We believe that the DC code states clearly what Mr. Woodard's habeas exhaustion requirements are. The court has to follow the plain language.
Is there a different exhaustion issue in terms of his obligation to have requested the medical records through the existing procedures?
Well, no, I don't think that's an exhaustion issue. I think that's actually a merits issue. Uh-huh. He's alleged that he did exhaust, that he did make repeated requests.
He alleged he asked for them, but there are procedures, right?
Correct.
He doesn't allege that he sought them through the procedures and they were denied, does he?
Well, I think fairly read, his pro se pleadings are difficult to parse, but I do think that he does say, I made repeated requests, I exhausted all my remedies, I asked everyone, I asked the administrators, mm-hmm. And I think fairly read, his pleadings can be construed to say, I exercised my right to get my medical records under the statute, and I was denied. He doesn't cite to the statute, that is correct, but he does say, I made repeated requests, I even made written requests, I tried to exhaust all my remedies, and I was denied my records arbitrarily and capriciously nonetheless. I think the district is trying to now make a merits argument of whether or not that actually happened. He doesn't have to address your exhaustion point. His medical records, which sound in 1983, he has no exhaustion obligation under 1983, and the merits issue of whether or not he actually did what he said he did, that needs to be litigated below. Mr. Woodard made these allegations. They were uncontested below. The district concedes that they missed or ignored his claim to medical records that a panel of this court subsequently recognized and refused to grant summary affirmance and asked us to brief. If the district wants to now contest whether or not Mr. Woodard failed to properly request his records under the statute, they can do so.
I'm still confused about the going back to the practical. My understanding of the brief, the red brief, was that if you want the medical records, you can have the medical records.
Have you
asked for the medical records?
I think what I can say is we've had a discussion and we were unable to settle that part of the prospective access to the medical records claim. Mr. Woodard's position continues to be that he asked for the medical records 2 years ago, that he exercised his rights under the statute, and that he was denied his rights under the statute. Now, whether or not that proves to be the case after the facts are litigated, there's no record before the court here because this case was dismissed on the pleadings. Effectively, the district court granted the district a dismissal on 12b-6.
Let me ask you a less practical question.
Yes.
What cases support a constitutional right to medical records in this circumstance?
Well, we've briefed voluminously possible bases for Mr. Woodard's medical records, but I think at this point, the district has already conceded that Mr. Woodard has a statutory right to his medical records, which would then give him essentially a property right and an entitlement that he has a procedural due process not to be deprived of arbitrarily.
And therefore the procedures in place are not adequate?
Well, he's alleged that he got no process. So our position is not that he's entitled to a certain process. He's alleged that he followed the statute. I think reading his pro se pleadings, you know, liberally taking all inferences in his favor, as this court has said he's entitled to in Anyan Wutaku. If one takes those inferences, he's alleged that he did follow the statutory procedure, that he was denied his medical records arbitrarily. So we do think that he has a procedural due process claim. Whether or not that claim will succeed is a separate question.
He doesn't have an unqualified right to those records because
certainly not.
There's the exception if they feel it would be injurious for him to have them and so forth.
Which the district has never raised.
Well, we don't.
Right.
We don't know that on this record. I mean, we don't know.
Well, yes.
As it was arbitrary.
Correct. We don't know whether the district, exactly, the record is blank, and so we don't know what happened, which is why we think that this case needs to be remanded. I see that my time
is... What exactly would happen on the remand?
At this point, on the remand, I think the court would address the habeas issue. And the issue is...
The release issue?
Sorry, the release issue. And I think at this point, the issue is not exhaustion. And if the court were to remand, that would determine that the issue is not exhaustion. The issue is really mootness. He has had these periodic reviews in Superior Court, as he has a statutory right to do so. And the question is there anything else in habeas that a federal court could give Mr. Woodard at this point? And to the extent that he's asking, say, for a fair hearing and alleged that he didn't get a fair hearing, he's had subsequent hearings. So does that moot out his habeas claim? I can't speak to that right now. I don't think the record is sufficient for anyone to say, but I think a district court could look at the habeas issue.
So we sit here today, though, is he still asking for release
yes.
as a substantive matter?
Yes. And then the district court
regardless
could also look...
Regardless of what procedures are employed, he's entitled to release.
I'm sorry?
Regardless of what procedures are employed, he's entitled to release is your position
well,
today.
He has alleged that he is entitled to release and would like to use his medical records to show that, and they may or may not show that. The other issue would be whether or not he has a procedural due process right to his medical records.
Finish your sentence, sorry.
And the district, I think, is ready to litigate the merits of that, and that could be litigated and resolved below as well.
short of his claim for release, where does his claim for a right to be in a less restrictive environment within the institution fall?
Well, I think his claim actually, at this point, my understanding is that what he wants is some sort of independent living, some sort of parole from St. Elizabeth's, so that would be where.
So he's no longer in this heightened, he's no longer in
no,
this maximum?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, it's not in the record, but my understanding is that he's no longer on maximum security.
I see.
So.
Isn't he also pursuing other proceedings in Superior Court? I thought the district brief said that.
Yes, and that's my point to Judge Kavanaugh, is I don't think that the issue here, at least on the habeas claim, is exhaustion. The issue is mootness, because he has had these other local court procedures, and that may moot out any habeas claim that he has. It wouldn't moot out his medical records claim, because he is asking for a retrospective relief in on that, which he may or may not be entitled to.
Sorry for one more question. Sure. What exactly is the retrospective relief?
Well, he's asked for damages for the denial of the medical records since the time that he asked for them, as he alleged he properly did under the statute. Whether or not he's entitled to those, I can't speak to that.
So just to be clear, if it went back, it could go back solely as a 1983?
No, I think...
If all these proceedings are going on in Superior Court,
right,
and he's using the local remedies, and the habeas is moot, then you would be...
Well, I can't represent to the court that they... I think the better course, and perhaps this court could decide that it's moot, but I think the better course would be for the court to send it back for the district court to make that determination, because I don't think that there's an adequate record.
Whichever one makes the determination...
Right.
Then your position is you would be left with a freestanding 1983.
Mr. Woodard would, yes, but I'm from the Public Defender Service, and there's an issue about whether or not we would be able to represent him in that capacity.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Ms. Wilson.
Good morning, Mary Wilson for the District of Columbia. I'd like to start with the issue of whether his request for records is moot and where that stands. It is the district's position.
Does he have the records?
It is the district's position. We have a record that we have complied with his request for records. From discussions with his counsel, he disputes that. We would be glad to give him another copy as soon as he gives us an updated written request. We have no current request. There are criminal and civil violations.
Not just give him another copy.
We will give him another copy as soon as he gives us a current written request, because there are criminal and civil sanctions for releasing the records without a written request.
Understood.
And the previous request is time dated. All we need is a piece of paper from him, and we will give him a duplicate copy. The district court properly dismissed the habeas claim based on Mr. Woodard's failure to exhaust.
Well, can I ask you a question first about the documents? I couldn't find anywhere in the district court proceedings that the district had raised this issue of his failure to follow the proper procedures for the documents. Am I wrong about that?
That the district didn't raise exhaustion?
Yeah, right.
No, in response to the order to show cause, the district invoked 2250, said that he had not exhausted.
No, I mean, in the district court, just tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, I'm happy to, maybe I just missed it, but where in the district court did you say that, look, all he had to do was ask and we would give it to him?
Oh, on the records.
Yeah.
No.
You didn't.
But let's look at the case. I'm sorry. I misunderstood the court's question. The district was asked to file a response to an order to show cause why habeas should not issue. The only reference to medical records in the initial habeas petition is on the fourth or fifth page. There's a reference to medical records. There's no clear request that he has a freestanding request to the medical records apart from any interest in unconditional release. It's only in subsequent filings that he makes a clear request for his records. And it's also that he makes that request in the context that he needs the records to prove his habeas case. I mean, there's specific language.
At some point he does say 1983, though.
He does use the words 1983, but he also says clearly, I need the paper trail to show that I shouldn't be in Max. I need the paper trail to show they're giving me the wrong medicine. I need the paper trail to show I want to get out. And all that is inextricably intertwined with the ongoing proceedings in Superior Court. And he never asked there for to be unconditionally released. There's no indication he ever asked in Superior Court for his medical records, probably because he had them there. So in terms of the habeas, there's no valid claim here that he has exhausted in Superior Court, and the district court properly dismissed the habeas claim based on his failure to exhaust. And Judge Henderson, in response to your original question about 16-1901, 24-501-K7 says an application for writ of habeas corpus shall not be entertained unless the person has first pursued his relief under that section. 24-501-KG says an NGI acquittee, the section does not preclude pursuit of habeas corpus to establish entitlement to release under the provisions of that section. And it is the district's position that he had a remedy under 2501K and a remedy under 16-1901, and he had to pursue those remedies for all the claims that he raises in federal court and also pursue an appeal from the denial of such a claim.
I read your brief as they're not alternatives, that he's got to do both. And what does 16-1901 add to 24-501K? Why does he have to do both, or am I wrong about what
you're saying? I mean, we do say that there might be a claim preclusion or res judicata, that it would not be a judicial efficient use of judicial resources to just do two duplicative proceedings. But I think the reliance on 16-1901 bolsters our claim that he had to appeal the denial. Just in general, habeas exhaustion rules applicable in federal court. If you have a local remedy, you have to have a complete cycle, including all appellate review.
That would be the 501K7 or 6, whatever.
I think there are alternative ways of reaching the same conclusion. He had local remedies. He did not raise the same claims in the Superior Court. To the extent he did, he did not pursue an appeal. And to that, on the same issue, we also rely on 2254 and the policy for exhaustion that led to the enactment of 2254, which...
Shouldn't we leave it up to Congress to decide whether exhaustion requirements apply in cases against the District of Columbia? I mean, it's not really our place to be reading things into statutes that Congress hasn't put there.
Well, the Supreme Court originally established the exhaustion doctrine in Ex parte Royal and Urban v. Dowd to avoid, because of the policy of avoiding conflict between federal courts and local courts, we're ending up the comedy consideration, and also to avoid duplicative rulings. A ruling here in habeas would possibly conflict with the ruling in the ongoing proceedings in Superior Court concerning his entitlement to relief. So the Supreme Court, under that policy consideration, said no, the federal courts will wait until the local courts have had one complete opportunity to reach the issue. So no, the court does not have to wait for Congress to act.
One of the questions we asked you to brief was on 24-501K. And if you will turn to, I guess the quickest way to find it, it's in the blue brief, page 71, the addendum.
What was the page?
71. Okay, subsection 7. An application for habeas corpus on behalf of a person, it goes on to say, who's entitled to file under this section, shall not be entertained if it appears that the applicant has failed to apply for relief and so on. Is the habeas corpus that's being discussed there both 2254 and 16-1901. What is your position on that? That's one question I want.
Our position is, yes, that would be both, that an NGI acquittee may not pursue 16-1901 or 2254 relief.
All right, so that ties into the question about how do you read 16-1901 with this? And I thought your brief said he's got to do them both, but are you now saying he's got to do 501 first, 501K first?
Yes.
And then 16-1901 or 2254?
The district's position is that he would then have to do 16-1901. Perhaps the district would have a res judicata or some type of claim preclusion grant if it was just simply duplicative. But he would have to pursue both remedies before proceeding to federal court, including an appeal. Turning to the 1983 claim, there are similar reasons why, to the extent the pleadings below could be construed as an independent 1983 claim or a motion to amend his pleadings to constitute a 1983 complaint, that the court should abstain from reaching that for reasons similar to exhaustion. Under the Younger abstention doctrine, which is applicable to the district under JMM, the court should defer to the ongoing judicial enforcement proceedings. And let me say there was a ruling just this week on Mr. Woodard's most recent petition for conditional release, where the Superior Court granted him release to a day program. He's allowed to go accompanied to the day program.
You're talking about your Younger argument here?
Younger? Yes.
Doesn't Younger only apply when the state proceedings are brought by the state?
Well, I hadn't considered that aspect of it, but...
That's what we've held. These proceedings are not brought by the state. So.
Well, the original prosecution was brought by the state, and his commitment is pursuant to state prosecution. And his ongoing commitment is pursuant to the United States and the district opposing his release. Mm-hmm. But the same result could be reached under Heck v. Humphrey in that... If the federal court were to grant him relief in the 1983 case on his entitlement to release or concerning the conditions of his confinement, that would imply the invalidity.
All he's seeking in the 1983 is the medical records.
Mm-hmm. Right. And to the extent
that that doesn't imply anything about the conviction or the commitment.
Yes, but first, the court doesn't need to reach the issue of whether there's a freestanding constitutional right to medical records separate and apart from any claim that he needs them to seek his liberty, because
why
he has
not?
That right
why
under
not?
Statute.
Suppose all he'd done here is say 1983 medical records. I want my medical records. What then?
Then we would say, one, the court doesn't need to reach the constitutional issue because he has a statutory right to the records and we'll give them to him if he signs a release. Two, he has no, I don't see any independent constitutional right to the records apart from that he might need them to obtain his release or his liberty. Certainly, I think because someone at St. Elizabeth's wrote his name down on a piece of paper that there's no constitutional right to that piece of paper unless we're using it to confine him.
Well, if he had a right to the medical records and the district was denying them to him, or he had requested them and not been given them, he would have at least an arguable claim for denial of procedural due process, wouldn't he? And that can be litigated in a 1983 action.
If the court were to find he had a liberty interest in the records, then yes, it can be litigated in 1983. But I think it would be difficult to find a liberty interest in the records if they are not being used to restrain
his liberty.
About a
property interest?
Moreover, pardon me?
About a property interest in them?
No.
No?
They're the district's records. But also, as we argue in our brief, any claim that he was denied those records without procedural due process is premature at this point. He had several remedies. If he was denied those under the Mental Health Records Disclosure Act, he could file an appeal in Superior Court. He has a FOIA claim, and he could have requested them in the ongoing proceedings in Superior Court.
So since this issue wasn't litigated at all in the district court, correct? I mean, as you just explained, you all thought this was just a habeas case,
yes.
Right? So shouldn't it go back to have that issue resolved?
That would be one approach, but it...
Why would it be the wrong approach? Would it be the wrong approach?
it's so clear the Court of Appeals has de novo review, and it's so clear that he has either no liberty, that the federal court should not reach the constitutional issue in this case because he has a statutory claim, or that he has no constitutional interest, or that he was not denied that interest without plenty of procedure under the local statutes. And finally, the Monell argument. I mean, the district has a statutory policy of giving patients at St. Elizabeth's their records.
Well, but he's alleged, and we have to take his allegations as true at this stage of the litigation, that he's requested them again and again, and he's not been given them. That's all we know is what's in the complaint.
Yes, but to the extent he's trying to hold the district liable or district policymakers liable.
Well, he says that the district's failing to follow its own policy. That's essentially what he's arguing.
Right.
And that's sufficient under 1983, at least to raise the claim.
But the claim is premature at this point, Your Honor, because there are he has never raised the issue in Superior Court. The district has established procedures for him to pursue.
What about the substantive due process claim?
The substantive
that doesn't depend at all on the existence of a state right, statutory right to the records. He's bringing a straight 1983 substantive due process claim seeking access to the medical records. Why shouldn't a district court just consider that on the merits?
The district would urge this court to rule at this point as a matter of law that there's no substantive due process interest in these records under the circumstances here, that this is certainly not the type of extreme arbitrary government conduct of not giving him his records in the time frame he alleges when he didn't pursue an appeal to Superior Court for them, he didn't file a FOIA claim, and in the regular motions he files every 6 months in Superior Court, he never said, I need my records to seek my release from St. Elizabeth's. So under those circumstances, there's certainly no substantive due process claim here.
Okay,
wait. Urge the court to affirm.
All right, we'll give you 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Briefly, what's your response to counsel's statement that all you need to do is file a written request and you'll have the documents?
Well, Mr. Woodard does have a statutory right to do that. His argument is that he has exercised that statutory right, that he did so 2 years ago, and it's still a mystery to him as to why he doesn't have his records.
But if he just does the paper again, you can get the records, which... Right.
Yes, certainly. I think that exists separate and apart from this litigation.
That would greatly narrow, at least, what's in dispute, if not eliminate.
Certainly. Yes.
Okay.
As far as whether or not the records are his or the district's, they're certainly his. Page 32 of our initial brief, it's quite clear from the legislative history that the statute providing him a right to his medical records were intended to make sure that the records are the client's, not the therapist's. What the district did or what Mr. Woodard did or didn't do to request the records in the history, that goes to the merits of his claim, and the district may have a very good merits-based defense, but where this case was dismissed on the pleadings, we think it's premature to litigate the merits before this court in the first instance, where they didn't even respond to Mr. Woodard's multiple claims that he had been denied his records, and his pro se pleadings need to be read as a whole, and he did make multiple claims that he had been denied access to his records, and those are cited on page 3 of our reply. As for Judge Kavanaugh's point that Congress has occupied the field insofar as it's determined what NGI acquittees' exhaustion requirements obligations are, I think that that's correct. 24501K7 states Mr. Woodard's habeas obligations, and there's no need to look outside of 24501K7. Whatever the policy pros and cons of imposing greater habeas exhaustion requirements on Mr. Woodard, that's simply not before the court. Congress has spoken, and the comity interests and the federalism interests that the district and the United States have brought up simply have no application here, where Congress is essentially working in its own backyard.
How could there be a substantive due process right to these records, given that there's no deeply rooted history of access to such rights, cases like Glucksberg and our recent decision in Abigail Alliance?
I think that the substantive due process argument, in light of the briefing, in light of the district's concession that he has a statutory right, which would then give a foundation for a procedural due process claim, takes second seat. I think there is an argument that could be made under Lawrence that there is an evolving consensus about the importance of medical records that would give some foundation to.
That's directly contrary to what we just said in Abigail Alliance.
I take your point, Your Honor. I think that Mr. Woodard is pressing his procedural due process claim at this point, given that the district has conceded that he at least has a statutory basis, which would give him an entitlement, and has also conceded that he has some sort of access to the court's claim to his medical records as well. Thank you.
You were appointed by the court to represent Mr. Woodard, and I realize there's some question about whether you should have been. That's not your fault. You've done an outstanding job.
So thank you. It's my pleasure.